Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studios in the heart of Hudson County, folks. You know, it's always in Union City, New Jersey. This is the seventh time, and I'll say it again, the seventh time, award-winning Talking to Hudson. I am, of course, New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, Top 100 Latino, Vida Latino Spirit online magazine, the weapon of mass disruption in Garden State media, and without a doubt, the people's choice and the people's voice. Fernando Uribe, happy April to you all, ladies and gentlemen. Appreciate you downloading us via blogtalkradio.com/talkinghudson and taking us with you wherever you go, wherever you get your podcast. Always make sure to download Talking Hudson there via Blog Talk Radio. Folks, I can't say enough. Happy April. Happy Easter in advance to all you great listeners. And again, as we continue here with year six of the podcast, again, can't say enough about how grateful I am to all of you for tuning in as regularly as you do, downloading the episodes, sharing the replays, of course, sharing it on your own social media platforms. Again, can't say enough, quite frankly, how grateful I am to all of you. Right to the show, ladies and gentlemen. We always love emails here at the inbox, talkinghudson@gmail.com. Once again, talkinghudson@gmail.com. Don't forget to like us, of course, on Facebook and without a doubt, follow us on Instagram at Talk on the Hudson. You can also check out my own Instagram and Twitter. It's the same handle, at the Fernando Zone. And of course, hit me up on Facebook. Folks, it's that handsome guy there. You can't miss me with the shades and the beard. Yes, Fernando Uribe. Don't forget to add me there on Facebook whenever you can. And folks, I can't say enough really about how grateful I am to all of you. The traffic remains strong here since we started on March the 1st of 2017, some years later. Talking Hudson still going strong, despite what a lot of haters might want to say in Hudson County and Garden State media. I'm not going anywhere, so still going strong here every single week on blogtalkradio.com/talkinghudson. Folks, as always, our exceptional programming here is brought to you by our amazing sponsors, the Office of New Jersey State Senator Brian P. Stack, again, leading the way, the hardest working legislator we know in Hudson County and, of course, in the state of New Jersey. It's always State Senator Brian Stack, of course, the new 33rd Legislative District after redistricting has changed a little bit here, but his leadership hasn't changed, and his ability to be accessible and transparent to his constituency hasn't changed either. Contact him, folks, again, anywhere, anytime, 201-721-5263 is the district office number, and, of course, on his cell phone, 201-376-1942, the State Senator, again, pre-COVID, during COVID, post-COVID, accessible, finds a way to work and make things work for his constituents again, not just as the mayor of Union City, but of course also as the distinguished state senator. Again, make sure you follow him on Instagram and Twitter, folks. It's the same handle, at Mayor Stack, and of course, like him on Facebook. Hey, he's doing great things in the New Jersey State Senate. Again, one of our proud sponsors here. I'm talking to Hudson. Folks, I also want to tell you about the town of West New York, my hometown, born and raised there, a proud Memorial High School Tiger. Without a doubt, obviously, great things coming out of that high school. Of course, in the town of West New York, a deeply contested mayoral battle, obviously, folks, with less than maybe a few weeks to go, obviously about maybe 4 weeks to go, essentially, in the town of West New York. But, of course, the great services, the great really what they do for residents in the town of West New York is just amazing there. Shout out to the current mayor and the administration there. You can check out all the great resources available to town residents at www.westnj.org, whether it's outlining the new 57th Street parking garage, which will be amazing as it'll create 180 new parking spaces to help improve the situation in West New York. Of course, we also have just amazing things going on within the township itself. Spring soccer begins later next month. Again, registrations are available at the West New York Recreation Department, which is located at Town Hall. Again, virtual birth certificate and a valid U.S. passport, and two recently received proofs of West New York residency available and are required to register. Again, get your kid involved, folks. Soccer back in the town of West New York, the great rec department there. Check it out at westnewyorknj.org. town.org. Don't forget to like it on Facebook, of course. Follow it on Instagram and Twitter. All the same handle, folks, at Town of WNY. Also, shout out to the town of Weehawken, Mayor Richard Turner, and Township Administrator Gio Amato, along with the town council. Proud sponsors of the podcast. Folks, check out all the great things going on in the township of Weehawken via weehawken-nj.us, whether it's about recreation, community, and much more, folks. They bring you the latest and are accessible also to their residents, as I said, in the township of Weehawken, excuse me. Some notable things going on in the town of Weehawken, folks. Upcoming school board election and referendum is coming up on Tuesday, April the 25th. Hopefully you register to vote in the town of Weehawken. More information, check out the town website, weehawken-nj.us. Don't forget to like it on Facebook and, of course, follow it on Twitter as well. And last but not least, folks, the city I call home, amazing city for the arts. One of the better police departments in the state of New Jersey. Great services for seniors, for students, for our kids, all together, recreation, everything great going on, folks, in the city of Union City, again, led by the outstanding leadership, by Mayor Brian Sack, of course, and the Board of Commissioners, which consists of Marjorie Martinetti, certainly Celine Valdivia, Lucio Fernandez, and, of course, Wendy Guron. Great, great commissioners, great leadership in the city of Union City. Great stuff coming up, folks, in the performing arts, obviously, at the William Musso Cultural Center coming up on April the 7th. At 7 p.m., we will have the Bonafide concert there. Great acoustic stuff going on at the, as I mentioned before, at the William Musso Cultural Center in downtown Union City coming up this Friday at 7 p.m. Other great events, ladies and gentlemen, Cinco de Mayo celebrations on Cinco de Mayo for the Mexican flag raising at the International Plaza at 12 noon. And there will also be a mini concert lit on that evening with lively music by mariachi and much more to celebrate the Cinco de Mayo this year coming up on a Friday. Of course, the Mother's Day luncheon, don't forget it, coming up on Saturday, May the 12th at the Colin Powell Elementary School. And of course, folks, this Saturday, April the 8th from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m., the Easter Fair. Hey, maybe the Easter Bunny might be in town. So all you kids out there, folks, come check out the Easter Bunny at the Instant Easter Fair this Saturday, April the 8th from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. in downtown Union City. All the great stuff, folks, going on in the city of Union City. Again, check it out, ucnj.com. All right, folks, again, one of the things I take pride in, again, and I don't mean to be braggadocious, but I just, you know, it's facts are facts. One of the reasons the podcast does well is because of outstanding guests and the lively conversations and the engaging dialogue. And this is no exception. He's a guy who I respect immensely. He is the founder and publisher of the Jersey City Times. You can check out all the good stuff he puts up there via jcitytimes.com. Folks, my good friend and a guy who I enjoy talking to quite often, Adam Morrill joins us here on Talking the Hudson. What's going on, brother?
Hey, Fernando, how are you?
I'm great, man. Just in advance, want to wish you a happy Easter to your family and enjoy the nice weather we're getting. How are you, man? How's 2023 treating you?
Super busy. Very, very busy.
Well, without a doubt. And, you know, let's get right to it here. Good piece I was talking about today at the studio as I was recording Talking Politics via the Hudson Media Group. And I don't know, Aaron, bro. I see the, you know, the mayor says he's proud of his record in the city-to-city address. But as the saying goes, is everything strong in the state of the city?
Well, I think the mayor and the city are facing some challenges. First and foremost, fiscal challenges. I'm hearing there is a big budget deficit that the city is facing, close to $100 million, although they may be able to work around it by sort of spreading that budget deficit out over a few years is apparently a technique they can use to do that. Nonetheless, there is a shortfall. So that's the biggest problem right now. But there are additional issues that I think need addressing and the mayor would probably want to address. I've written a lot about, for instance, 911 and the problems that are well publicized there. There are problems with morale in the police department. I'll be coming out within the next 24 hours with an article about that and one particular subject, which I will have to keep confidential until then. But I think there are a lot of challenges right now for the mayor and for the city generally. Obviously, affordability is a huge problem. I did a little article about that recently. Rents in Jersey City have gone up, I think, seventh fastest in the country. And it's really not affordable anymore, especially downtown, obviously, but people getting pushed out. So there's just a lot going on, a lot of change in Jersey City. I think during the first two terms of the mayor's mayoralty, I think, you know, he was able to coast a little bit. Things were going relatively well. But I think now with taxes going up and costs going up, I think there are problems that are going to be hard to fix. So I think there are a lot of challenges out there. I mean, I don't want to say that there aren't some good things going on. I mean, I think we a lot of the development, which he points to, has been a net positive. It's brought a lot of new people in. The city is, it has got more restaurants and nightlife and activity than I think anybody could have imagined. I moved to Jersey City 27 years ago. It was a very, very different place. So I think a lot of the changes have been good. The mayor's done some good things on transportation. I think a lot of people like the bike lanes, although some car drivers don't, but feel that he's doing a good job with that. The VIA program seems to be a success, although I don't really know what the finances of that are. So there's some good things going on too. I don't want to paint a completely bleak picture, but there's definitely some big challenges.
Well, I mean, listen, and I appreciate that you outlined them, because I think that, you know, you, again, from the beginning that I started talking with you and interviewing you on this podcast, I mean, I've always respected your transparency on these things, because I think that, you know, a lot of local news sites have chosen not to be openly critical of the mayor for different reasons, one reason or another. And I think that what I would argue probably the biggest dynamic for you and why the Jersey City Times continues to do well, I think, is because you cover stories and you touch upon things that Jersey residents aren't really hearing about. And this is not me throwing shade at friends of mine that work in journalism. I mean, whether it's John Hines with Hudson County View, Al Sullivan with Tap Into Jersey City, or anyone else, I'm not throwing shade. I'm just simply saying that I think that they're more about reporting news, which is fine. That's what they're supposed to be doing. That's their bread and butter. I think your model, though, Aaron, I think is a little more about, yeah, it's reporting news, but I think you put a lot of critical thinking into your pieces, and you really try to shave the apple down, I think, ultimately to its core. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think I have a slightly different focus than some of the other news outlets. I think I try to do a little more research, and that's not because I'm smarter or better than the other outlets. They have a different model. You mentioned John Hines. I mean, he is an incredibly productive guy. He puts out a lot of stuff. He covers a big geographical area. I don't really know how he does it. He does it largely alone. And as such, it's kind of hard for a guy like John to spend the time it takes to, you know, do document requests and get experts and dig through the kind of stuff you got to dig through to do, investigative work. And again, that's not a criticism at all. He does an incredible job just getting the bare news out there. And there's a need for that. My reason for starting the Jersey City Times was always to try and get under the hood and really see what was going on and see if some of the narratives out there were true or false. And if there were stories that were not being told, I wanted to tell them. And there are a lot of stories, and I think it's important to tell those stories. So I definitely don't get as much news out as John does. He pumps it out, and my hat goes off to him for that. But I want to try and go dig a little deeper. You know, that's kind of my approach.
No, you certainly do a good job. Again, I'm someone that I've gone on record. I've met multiple times when I talk on not just this podcast but other shows, when people ask me, hey, you know, what news do you look at locally? Like, who do you rely on and trust? Who do you cite when you're in the studio with Hudson Media Group, you know, discussing local stories? And again, I don't know if you've seen my analysis or not, Aaron, but I mean, I'll reference Jersey Times articles a lot. You know, I like what you write. I certainly enjoy reading it. And I reference it when I'm doing sort of a rundown of what's going on in Hudson County. So, I mean, I've had any reservations. I mean, some people might say, oh, why do you reference the Jersey Times? Well, it's good writing. If it wasn't good writing, I wouldn't reference it. Like, it's as simple as that. I think I'm very consistent about, I think, the way I look at news. And again, I'm in the opinion business. So I'm going to look at local stories and use it and break it down and dissect it. So, I mean, again, listen, you keep doing a great job in the sense of what you're doing. I think the phrase you just used right now, looking under the hood, I think was perfect. But I think that sort of gives a more in-depth look about looking at the vehicle that is journalism here in Hudson County, especially in Jersey City. Let's dissect a little bit something else here. It really caught my eye here as I was looking at, your breakdown of the state of the city address. And certainly you mentioned that there are some strides and gains when it comes to the mayor. But again, this is a record now. This is a record that, as we all know, he's announced he's not running for mayor again, which prompts the speculation he'll be running for governor. I was just on a podcast last week opining as a guest about the field of candidates coming up for 2025. And we're still a little bit of a ways away. But this is a record that Stephen Fulp has to run on, Aaron. And I got to tell you that, you know, if he's going to enter the arena with people like Representatives Josh Gottheimer, who can outraise him money-wise, that's a fact. That's not me being hyperbolic. That's a fact. And I know that from people I talk to that I trust in New Jersey. Mikey Sherrill also can raise some money. Ross Baraka, obviously, is a formidable guy. But this is a record that Stephen Fulop has to run on. If you're Stephen Fulop, are you a little worried, though, that if you announce your candidacy for governor that this record's going to be, like, really torn apart?
Well, you know, first let me say that the mayor is an incredibly talented and smart guy. I think he's extremely good at shaping a message and building a brand, around his candidacy. And he's done that very effectively in Jersey City. He's positioned himself as sort of a forward-thinking, technocratic reformer, and I think he's been quite successful in getting that message out and having people believe that that's what he is. And I have no doubt that if he goes statewide, he will have a very well thought out plan to get his brand, if you will, out there. And I think it's been largely successful in Jersey City politically in terms of garnering support. And I don't see why it would not be successful statewide. What I think the difference is that statewide, I think he's, as you mentioned, going to face much tougher competition, in Mikey Sherrill, Josh Gottheimer, Steve Sweeney, and whoever else throws their hat in the ring. So he's going to be running against really formidable, opposition. And, I love about Bill Mazzacutis, and I think he did a great job, but he had, you know, a quarter of the money that that the mayor had when he ran against him last. And obviously, you know, that's been the case since. So I think, you know, the mayor's going to face, you know, incredible opposition, you know, strong, well-funded, with name recognition across the state if he runs for governor. The second thing he's going to face is a much more vigorous press. So I think that his record is going to be pored over in a way that he's not accustomed to. I think that's going to make it fundamentally different. So I don't think he goes into this race at all as a front runner. From what I know, his name recognition is not that good, especially in the south part of the state. People just don't know anything about him or who he is.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, you know. So I think it's going to be a much harder climb for him.
That's
kind of my thought on that.
I mean, I agree with you, but I would say that I don't think the vitriol or the scrutiny of his record by the New Jersey media. I mean, again, I think, Alan, listen, you follow me on social media. I think you know how I feel about statewide media. I'm really the only journalist that really is openly critical of what's going on in New Jersey. And, I mean, I think case in point, like, look at how the Garden State media pretty much coddles the emperor. And I don't have a problem calling him that because that's what Murphy's become. And they don't really scrutinize him. So I think the idea that someone like Fulop or whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be in 2025 to run for governor, I don't think they're really going to go after him too much. So if it's Fulop who, when the dust settles, he's the candidate, I don't really foresee like the Garden State liberal media apparatus really going after him. I mean, we don't see it with Murphy, and Murphy's running the state into the ground. And, I mean, again, I say it to people all the time, like, I mean, how Steve is going to address affordability, again, case in point, isn't one of the biggest pet peeves about Stephen Fulop's record is about affordability in Jersey City, right? I mean, that's all I hear from people, at least that comment on social media. Not necessarily you. I think you've been intellectually honest enough to, like, present well thought out columns to dissect it. But the bottom line is Jersey City is not becoming affordable. And that's a microcosm, again, of what the state is. I'm just concerned that if Steve is indeed the nominee, like what's he going to run on that people can find believable about affordability? Again, the governor and the Senate president and the assembly speaker are doing nothing to help make New Jersey more affordable. I mean, they're running the state into the ground. I just can't imagine Steve would want to continue that path that we're seeing right now, though, Aaron. And I think that because of the screening faces in Jersey City,
Well, you're right. You're right factually that Jersey City is much less affordable, but I think the mayor is extremely good at crafting a message, as I said. I think he's really good at it. I think he's got the mind of a business person, really, more than a politician in a way. I mean, he's good at crafting a message and a brand, and he's going to run on Bayfront, which is slated to have 35% affordability. He's going to craft a message on something he rolled out today with Solomon, Gilmore, and Sala, which is a right to counsel for tenants that are wrongfully evicted. And he will hammer away at those. And I don't know that most voters are going to, as I said before, look under the hood there. Now, I think that the difference will be when he does that. I think that there is more press, as weak as the press has become, and I agree with you, the press is nowhere near what it should be, and that's a problem that's national, not just in New Jersey. We have a national problem with the press being, understaffed and maybe a little too compliant. I think that the incentives are going to be different because there's going to be people like Gottheimer and Cheryl and Sweeney saying to editors, hey, have you looked at this? Have you looked at that? So the incentives are going to be very different. In Jersey City, you have had a mayor who could retaliate against a press outlet if they were too critical of him in a way that would make their life very difficult. And I know this because he's done that to me. He's had an ability to intimidate the press where I don't think he will have that on a state level. And so I think the dynamics are going to be very different statewide. I don't think the statewide press is going to be intimidated as easily. That would be my guess. I could be wrong.
I mean, again, the reason I'm skeptical is, again, case in point, look at NJ Spotlight News. I mean, David Cruz is this lifelong Jersey City resident. And, you know, I mean, there's no secret. I mean, David Cruz and I don't like each other at all. But, I mean, where I've been openly critical of David is that, you know, he works for NJ Spotlight News. I mean, arguably one of the bigger news outlets in the state that, you know, again, they do a piss poor job, you know, really going after the governor and all the god-awful things he's doing here in the state to destroy it. But I don't know if David's going to be as punitive with someone like Fulop. I mean, let's be honest, at the local level, is NJ Spotlight News or David Cruz really – I mean, listen, and we'll get to, you know, the way David's covered the Amita G story and Fulop and the reaction by Fulop and all that. We'll get to that in a moment. I really want to pick your brain about it. But the point is, I think that whether it's him or NJ.com – or NorthJersey.com, I remain really skeptical that, you know, should the dust settle and Steve finds a way to win a primary and be the Democratic nominee. And let's be honest, Republicans aren't going to win a gubernatorial
election. Well, okay, now you're talking about something different. You're talking about after he wins a primary. That would be a different story. But I'm saying as against his Democratic rivals, I think there would be much, much greater scrutiny. But, you know, whether they would, you know, give Cittarelli or whoever he runs against, I don't know who the Republicans are thinking about putting up in the next election, but, you know, should he run against, you know, against a Republican, I would agree with you that the press probably will tilt slightly towards Fulop, to the press, to having the sympathies it has generally.
Sure.
You know, that probably is a good bet. But, you know, I think in the run against those, the rest of the Democratic field, I think it's going to be very tough. And that's going to be the hard one for him to get through, I think.
Certainly. Keeping it in Jersey City, though, obviously with the potential of him running for the primary, it opens up a lot of speculation, though, Aaron, about who would run for mayor in 25. I'm hearing a lot of whispers. Based on what's happened lately with redistricting, obviously, and how the landscape has changed about legislative candidates, which we'll get to in a minute. I really want to pick your brain on that one as well. But it seems like I'm hearing the same whispers. Again, I'm pretty sure your sources are a hell of a lot better than mine, but I keep hearing names like James Solomon, Joyce Waterman, the council president. I keep hearing Daniel Rivera. Obviously, his name's being floated around as some of the, hey, you know what? He's got a lot of political capital. He can run. He or she can run. How do you size up the field for 25 in Jersey City? Because I just think that, you know, you look at each person. Again, and I'm just sort of thinking out loud about who potentially. I mean, there might be a sleeper candidate we don't know about yet. Like Bill O'Day, for example, might want to run. And we know Bill O'Day is, you know, pretty left-leaning like Solomon. I mean, they're kind of, I think, in the same boat maybe. I think Bill O'Day is maybe a more working-class Democrat, you know, as opposed to like a Solomon who's like very far left. He's very progressive, you know, he's all into the woke stuff and all that. Those are names I'm hearing, though, Aaron. Like, what names are you hearing, or who do you think really is?
Well, there's one additional name that I have heard bandied about, and that's Musab Ali. I read about Musab as a potential candidate. I can't remember where. It might have been Amy Wilson's weekly blog post. I'm not quite sure where I read about Musab, but I think Musab would be a very, very strong candidate if he decided to run. For a number of reasons. One, he's from Jersey City, born and raised here.
He's you know, a Jersey City success story, you know, went to Harvard Law School, was a board of ed president, and I don't know how old he was, 18 or something like that. I don't know. It was crazy, crazy young, very impressive guy. He covers sort of he's left of center, but I think he's probably not so left of center that he's going to turn off, you know, sort of blue collar voters who are more interested in meat and potato issues than some of the progressive agenda. And I think he would be very strong. And he appeals to a lot of the same people that James Solomon or maybe Bill O'Day would appeal to. But he's younger. And as a person, you know, as it were, of color, I think that makes him maybe that gives him a leg up in Jersey City. You know, if you're talking sort of identity politics,
sure.
You know, that gives him a leg up. So mm-hmm. I think he's an interesting one. I can't see Joyce Waterman and I like Joyce, you know, as a person. When I meet her, I she's always incredibly pleasant and nice. I don't see her as particularly strong as a candidate, but I may be wrong. Solomon, I think, is, you know, a smart guy and, you know, obviously talented. It'll be remains to be seen whether he can connect with sort of blue-collar voters outside of Ward E. I'd like to, you know, he needs to, he'll probably need to prove that he can. Certainly he came across when he was talking about, you know, cutting the police budget, even though it was a very small cut that he was talking about. It was really, really small. He got branded as being one of these defund the police guys. I'm not sure that's going to help him, but, you know, maybe that, you know, maybe he can get around that perception
mm-hmm.
that he's sort of like, you know, coming from that strict progressive background. Daniel Rivera, I really don't know about Daniel Rivera. Again, I like Daniel Rivera as a person a great deal. He's just a very friendly guy. Every time I talk to him, warm guy, probably would be great at retail politics because he's got a very, you know, just a nice, warm everyman vibe about him, which I think a lot of people would connect with, whether he can articulate some sort of vision for Jersey City and whether he'll connect with Ward E and sort of the, you know, or the downtown crowd is sort of, mm-hmm. he's got the reverse issue of James Solomon, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not clear to me that he would connect with sort of the upscale downtown types as much as he might need to.
Sure. No, listen, and I think those are all names. I think your breakdown was amazing there. I think it's going to be interesting who surfaces, and because again, you know, James Solomon's act plays well in downtown. There's a lot of transient people there. You know, a lot of millennials per se, a lot of the working professionals that catch the PATH train to New York, that, you know, live in downtown. And the reason they move downtown is because again, the arts, nightlife, restaurants, dining, everything, you know, I don't know if his act plays well on the South Side or the West Side or in the Heights. Again, I like James as a person. I like him personally. He's a good dad. I think his heart's in the right place. I think he sometimes gets too wrapped up in, I think, a lot of the woke nonsense that, you know, sometimes these outside organizations like to push. And, you know, I get it. He needs support. And listen, credit to James. He's won two elections basically going against the establishment in Jersey City, and he's won them. So, I mean, kudos to him. He has a base. He has a following. I don't care for some people in his following. Again, when, you know, whether it's the Democratic Socialists or Progressive Democrats of Hudson County, sometimes, you know, the messengers there, I think, are a little convoluted, but there's no denying that James has a base. And I think James works hard. He campaigns hard. He can raise money. I don't know if his act will play well in the Heights. Same thing with Joyce Waterman. Yeah, she's the council president, but will that act play well on the South Side? Will it play well in the Heights? That remains to be seen. I think the way you broke it down, I think, is important. One name, obviously, I think that it's for, and this is not me being malicious. This is me just stating the fact here. I think, obviously, you know, there was talk when she got elected that okay, well, you know, her name carries some political water in Hudson County. That might not be the case anymore. Obviously, her father is choosing not to run for another term. Craig Guy is going to be looking to succeed Tom DeJesus County Executive. And we all know about Amy DeJesus, Aaron. It's been dissected to death. Certainly some journalists have taken me to task on my interviewing skills or whatever, or my brand of journalism when it comes to Amy DeJesus. I think that she's someone that, you know, she might have trouble running for re-election in 25. She's chosen not to step down. She went to court earlier this year. We all know what that was about. It's all been dissected, Aaron. I haven't really gotten your thoughts in the last few months since she went to court, since she's done some interviews, only two interviews. I really want to get your thoughts on this because I'm sure you have a lot to say.
Well, I mean, to some degree, my thoughts are, you know, are sort of run along two tracks. On the one hand, I think what she did in leaving the scene of an accident was pretty unpardonable, and I don't believe the story she gave to David Cruz. I just don't believe it based on what I know. Now, I may be proven wrong, but it just didn't ring true to me. I've talked to people that that were involved in some of the activities around the discovery of the video and those sorts of things, and I can tell you that there are problems with her story, and I think a lot of people have problems with the story. I would hope that she's telling the truth, you know, and it's my opinion at this point. I can't say for sure, but and I would love to give her the benefit of the. I think when you combine that with obviously the famous video from Hoboken, where she is clearly attempting to use her, you know, her power and her connections to get out of the ticket with the cop, and she's putting the cop in a very uncomfortable position and, you know, saying, do you know this person? Do you know that person? Let me call this person. Let me call that person. I think it is, it's created, unfortunately, a picture of a politician who is extremely entitled who feels that they can sort of take advantage of their position and avoid responsibility for their actions. Having said that, I know people who know Amy DeJesus. I don't know her except for asking her a few questions at a debate and saying hello to her, who speak very highly of her, you know, as a person, who speak highly of her as a person, but the perception is that she has, that there may be personal issues that are affecting her behavior, and there may be a sad story there that, you know, that people need to have some compassion for. The sad part about it is that whatever has happened in Amy DeJesus' life, and I've talked to people who've known her for a long time, at a certain point you can't rely on that. You can't use it as an excuse for bad behavior as an adult. And these things that she's done, the bike accident, the bike crash, I get in trouble for using accident, the bike crash and the Hoboken case, and then the situation where she was, you know, suspended from her job at Hudson Technical, is it Hudson Tech, County Tech,
where she was suspended for that from that job without pay and will not disclose what it was that got her suspended along with another teacher. These just make it very hard for somebody to be a credible public servant. And in fact, she ends up looking like a public self-servant. And that's the problem with Amy DeGeese. I don't think she really has a future, certainly as a mayor. Whether she could get elected on a slate like she did with Steve Phillip, maybe she could, because let's face it, people just vote down, you know, vote the slate a lot of times. But I don't see her as having much of a future politically. You know, had she handled the bike crash differently? Had she said, you know, I just freaked out, I panicked, I didn't know what to do? Had she handled it differently, that would have been an opportunity for her to redeem herself, perhaps. But doubling down on a story that not a lot of people believe, I don't think was a great strategy. And it's obviously for a lot of people, it wasn't truthful. So those are my thoughts on it.
I'm curious because I know that obviously the proceedings were dissected to death when she appeared in court with Brian Neary, again, one of the better criminal defense attorneys, I think, in the area. I think if you know anything about criminal law and you want to hire someone, and, you know, it's a hefty price tag, but you're getting good representation. If you read the transcripts like I did and you saw the proceedings, you would see Brian Neary, I think, painted a picture, obviously, of like any good attorney would to defend their client. I'm curious about your thoughts about the way that I think it was described. Again, and some journalists are, listen, I've been very, very transparent about it. I mean, I chose never to pile on her. And again, yeah, we're friends. And, you know, when I interview her and was interviewing her on my podcast, this podcast consistently for years, I've always felt there were fair interviews. Now, obviously, you know, there was a lot of scrutiny about my interview since I was the first one to get it. And that's fine. I don't really care. I take whoever criticized me with a grain of salt because there are some journalists, Aaron, you can't take Tom Morant seriously. I don't mean you personally. I mean this generically when I talk to people. You can't take Tom Morant seriously. So when I read that column, I had to laugh. I'm a guy criticizing someone about privilege when he benefits from privilege, I think, is rich. But I think what was interesting about the way she dissected the day's events, and I think there's been some speculation, whether it's been some journalists about, like, well, what prompted this? I know that she's taken exception with the fact of maybe there's a perception of her being under the influence that day. I mean, there seems to be no reports of that. There's been some allegations or insinuation, right? We've seen it. You're a smart guy. You read the columns. They're out there by other people. What did you think when you read that? Like, does it give any validity to the theory that there's more to the story than meets the eye, or is it just people just looking to grab a headline? What do you think?
Well, I think that, you know, obviously nobody knows because she never was administered a breathalyzer, and so anybody saying that she was drunk that day would be, I think, you know, saying something that they couldn't back up, and I think that, you know, you don't make a statement that is unequivocal about something like that. Somebody's reputation is on the line. You have to be very careful when you say these things. But I will confess that, you know, the possibility that, you know, she might have been under the influence and that she took some time to sober up, as it were, before she went to the police, you know, I think it occurred to me, it occurred to a lot of people. That doesn't mean that's what really happened, but the possibility that explains the 5 hours between when the crash took place and when she actually went down to the police precinct, that to me just, it just, that question begged to be asked. And I don't think anybody should be criticized for asking the question why it took 5 hours. Certainly getting the videotape would have taken very little time. You know, they knew that crash took place at nine in the morning, and getting the video, mm-hmm. they could have had it within an hour, and then they could have figured out who was driving the car probably within a half an hour of that. So, you know, if the police had, you know, wanted to, and I'm sure they did want to find this out, they could have known immediately who was driving that car and contacted her. And she said she went straight, as I recall, she went straight to her office at City Hall. So that's where she was driving to. So they would have known where to find her. It wasn't like she was hiking in mm-hmm. the woods. So
sure.
I think it's a legitimate question. It's a totally legitimate question. I don't remember what Tom Moran said specifically, whether he said he knew she was drunk. I don't think he did. I think he said maybe she was, you know, and maybe they need to explain this. I think it's a legitimate question. I mean, I asked the same question. I think a lot of people mm-hmm. asked the same question. What was
sure,
going on there?
Sure.
And
I
think she addressed it in her interview with Cruz, as I recall. She, you know, I think he asked her that question, if I'm not mistaken. I may be mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
But he
yeah.
asked her about it. I think everybody, you know.
It certainly creates a lot of, again, the speculation that people will continue to have about her. I mean, I'm going to interview her again coming up next month on my Real Talk show. And, I mean, we'll see where the civil matter is going. I haven't heard any news. I don't know. Again, your sources might tell you something different. I haven't heard anything about the civil case and how it's progressing, if it is. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with the civil matter, because I'm sure that Mr. Black is going to look for some damages. And based on the civil code, I think he could get some damages now. How he collects, we don't know. But I'm sure it's a story that I think we'll certainly be keeping an eye on. A story, Aaron, that you covered here, I know you made reference to it just a few minutes ago, talking about the tenant's right to counsel. It's a great article, and folks, again, you know, I urge you to, you know, after you listen to this week's episode with Aaron Morrell, the founder and editor of the Jersey City Times, again, take a chance and a moment to read this great, great column here. But very, very quickly, though, Aaron, just summarize for us really why this right to counsel ordinance for tenants is so crucial.
Well, I think in the present environment where affordability has become such an issue and people being pushed out of Jersey City by higher rents or being pushed out of their neighborhoods by higher rents, you know, or at least the perception that that's happening. And I hear about it more than I know about it, I have to confess. I think that it's understandable that politicians who want to, I think from the bottom of their heart, legitimately want to help people, but also see a political opportunity in siding with the little guy. I think it's understandable that they would want to do something like this. And to be honest, there are bad landlords out there, and everybody knows that. You know, the idea that that somebody wouldn't be able to represent themselves adequately against a landlord's attorney, I think it makes a right to counsel an attractive thing. There's politics behind it. There's just basic compassion behind it. So I
sure.
think the two come together. And according to Solomon, who I spoke to about this, he said this is, you know, this money is going to come out of a dedicated stream of money that comes from developers as they build their buildings. So it's going to be now, obviously, you know, as a Republican, I'm sure you will say, but there's no free lunch. You know, if the developer has to pay for it, well, then the people who rent his apartments, you know, are going to have to pay for it. So it's not really, you know, somebody's paying for this, and it's probably mm-hmm. going to be, you know, tenants or in new buildings or buyers of condos in new buildings. And that's, you know, he's going to pass it along to those people. And, mm-hmm. And that,
Aaron,
that is true.
But Aaron, let me ask you, I'll let you finish though, but just let me add this real quick, because my concern, again, you know me, I'm as fiscal conservative as there is there out there that really makes it a point to put the opinions out there. But my concerns are always about, like, on face value, you are absolutely correct. This looks on face value as a really noble act to help. And we learned through COVID that oftentimes we saw a lot of landlords being victimized as much as tenants. We get that. My concern is, like anything else, though, when you start hearing about, oh, this will raise money for this, right? We heard it with the gas tax. It will be put into the transportation trust fund, et cetera, et cetera. The roads suck in New Jersey as much as ever, okay? So when we hear about this tax this money being raised, and I'm just concerned that at some point, what's to stop the city from saying, no, forget about just taxing developers, let's just apply this as a tax to the city. What's 1% to Jersey City residents to create a fund to help their fellow Jersey residents? Aaron, it starts somewhere. You know what I'm saying, bro? Like, that's why I'm skeptical.
Well, you know, I think we need more Republicans, and I think you know, I personally, as a voter, I don't like having very little choice when I go to the ballot box. You know, I would like to live in a two-party or three-party city, and I live in a one-party city, and I'm a Democrat, but I'm a centrist Democrat, and I don't always agree with Democrats and their policy prescriptions, although they're almost always well-intentioned. Oftentimes they're wrong-headed from an economic standpoint, and so now I'm just speaking, you know, personally from my, you know, from my own political leanings. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I think if Democrats can be criticized, it's thinking that there's always a government program that's going to solve every problem. And I think that, you know, I think that Democrats need to be aware that sometimes there are programs that won't solve problems. On the other hand, I mean, I can't imagine, for instance, in the criminal justice system where I have a lot of experience, I was a prosecutor in Brooklyn, and then I was a defense attorney in Manhattan. And so in the criminal context, I mean, how one cannot imagine a world where criminal defendants don't get a lawyer. And, you know, one's housing is almost as important as one's freedom, whether one has a roof over their head, whether one has a habitable apartment to live in. You know, I do think it feels like there's something fundamentally wrong when tenants don't have, especially tenants of limited means, do not have, you know, effective representation against a lawyer, from a landlord, mm-hmm. that represents a landlord. So I think the devil is always in the details. How, you know, my understanding is they're not going to be, you know, I wouldn't love the idea of them setting up a bureaucracy of city employees to do this work. But my understanding, you know, is that what they are considering doing is, you know, helping to fund the waterfront project or a 501c3, an independent group, that, you know, sort of like the legal aid model. You know, the city of New York, you know, pays legal aid, which is an independent group to represent indigent criminal defendants. And that's sort of the model here. And you can even have competition in that. And you do in New York. In New York City, you have several 501c3s, you know, vying for that work, and so you actually have mm-hmm. competition to do that work. I probably share your concern about setting up bureaucracies to do this, but I think if the city can afford to do this, it should. And which leads me straight to the art museum, which I've come out against, and Jersey City Times has come out against. Now, we're going to be spending probably $12 million a year in Jersey City to fund an art museum for the top, you know, 1% of the city that is interested in, you know, European modern art. And that's, you know, and it's basically a vanity project in my view. It's that money or some part of it would be much better spent helping indigent tenants. You know, it's, you know, mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's too bad that, that, you know, and I would say that Councilman Solomon hasn't come out against the Pomp Review, because I think that its programs, its city expenditures like the Pomp Review that, mm-hmm. that make it unaffordable to do the stuff that even you as a Republican would probably admit is at least defensible from a moral standpoint, that it's well-intentioned, that it's going to actually help people, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, but funding a museum for, you know, college-educated people that are into modern European art, that seems like a very poor expenditure of city money in a city that's mostly
sure.
renters and, you know, still mostly working class people.
Speaking of benefiting residents, before I let you go, Aaron, you've been a gentleman to be on with me today, and I appreciate your time. You know, you really helped me segue into the next topic here, the last topic here for us. But, you know, Liberty State Park continues to be an ongoing debate. And we're hearing different characters in this ongoing drama, as they say, and this ongoing it's almost become a Shakespearean play, though, Aaron, for me, watching what's going on with Liberty State Park. I've interviewed some council people recently. I interviewed Councilman Array, Prince Array, and others. And let me put this out there. You live in Jersey City, so it's easy for me to say this because I live in Union City. I like to visit Liberty State Park a lot. As you know, I'm very philanthropic. I volunteer a lot of my time for the American Cancer Society. Love doing the walks there. I love going there for other philanthropic things like walks, marches, and stuff like that. My issue is this, and maybe because I look at it as, hey, you know, if this can help bring in revenue to help the city, why not? I don't see anything wrong with I understand the importance of green space. I want to preserve green space. Let me say that for the record. But the idea of a small little amphitheater or a small little arena, like the idea, Aaron, that, you know, listen, the weather's getting warm. I was just outside today. It reminds me that later this summer, I'll be going to the PNC Bank Arts Center down the shore to see concerts. That's great. I don't like burying that traffic. Just like during the 4th of July, we've seen what a great event it is during the 4th of July in downtown Jersey City. We have celebrities and artists come here. It's a great event for residents. It raises revenue, you know, tourism, whatever. You know, having a small little amphitheater or arena for a performing arts center, having some concerts during the summer, that revenue can go help the city. Maybe creating a few different soccer fields, football fields, practice facilities for our kids. I don't see anything wrong with that, Aaron. Again, I don't want the whole thing being monopolized into a big, you know, Xanadu, American Dream, more American Nightmare, if anything, type of complex. Yeah, green space is important, Aaron. I don't see anything wrong with a small little amphitheater and arena. I think it could benefit Jersey City and the revenue it could raise. What am I wrong, bro?
Well, okay. So first of all, there's one misconception. I mean, it's a state park, so any revenue that would be raised would be state revenue. It wouldn't go to Jersey City. That's the first thing.
Okay.
But I think there are two couple of issues. You got to kind of unpack them. One is the question of commercialization, and my understanding is that virtually everybody, even firemen's people, Liberty State Park for All Group and the People's Park Foundation, I'm not even sure that they're pushing commercialization, sort of private commercialization at this point, because I think I may be wrong about this, that has been taken off the table. And Sam Pessin might scream at me for saying that, because I might be wrong, but I think that's what I think more what is on the table are large venues, for instance, track and field, for various types of sports, literally permanent structures of 5,000, 7,000 people that would be used for sporting events. And if you look at the design that they created, there's a hockey rink, and then there are two large stadiums or medium-sized stadiums, 5,000, 2,500 and 7,000 feet. I forget the exact number of seats, mm-hmm. but quite large. And then there's the issue of an amphitheater for performances, and then there's a community center of some size. So there's they're talking about, I don't know, five structures of pretty big structures. And if you look at their drawings, which I was doing today, actually, if you look at their drawings, they literally take up all of the new space that will be created when they remediate the land. So right now there's this interior of the park that's got a lot of, that's got the residues of chromium and various, you know, toxic metals, and they're going to remediate that. They've got the money for that. They're going to remediate. They're going to cap it, put new soil over it, and they're going to make it beautiful. And Fireman's Group, and this is Fireman's Group. These folks did not exist as an organized force until Paul Fireman organized them. And I hate to say it, turned it into a racial issue. Never existed as there was never a racial tinge to the development of Liberty State Park. This group did not exist until Fireman, who wanted Cave and Point, made it very clear he wanted Cave and Point. These groups did not exist. And that's not to say that Bob Hurley and some of the people that are involved don't have, again, good, that they're not trying to do something good for Jersey City youth and for Hudson County youth that need places to play. So anyway, there are a couple issues. There's the commercialization, and then there's these venues. And I think the venues is the biggest problem right now from the perspective of park preservation people. The venues, let's face it, we all know these sports venues don't get used all the time, right? These are not going to be domed. They're not going to be usable for half of the year because of the weather. So we know that. And then during the usable portion of the year, they're only going to be usable, you know, when people are having events there. And the rest of the time, as stadiums do, they sit there unused, and you've got a structure that it can't be used by anybody but the athletes and their families that would come to see them compete. I think what's been so I question whether these massive stadiums would service anywhere near the number of people that green space would, because of the very nature of these types of structures mm-hmm. that are used for a relatively small number of people at a relatively small amount of the time. What my understanding is that Friends of Liberty State Park are like, fine, let's put active recreation in. We're good with 61 acres, which was the agreement, was the plan that was that was advocated by the Department of Environmental Protection. 61 acres, not a small amount. They're going to add that. They're going to take 61 acres of the new land that's being opened up and dedicate that to active recreation. There just won't be these big permanent structures. And mind you, there aren't big permanent structures in Central Park. There aren't big permanent structures in Prospect Park in Brooklyn. There are no stadiums in any of those places. You can have mm-hmm. sports. You can have track and field. You can have baseball. You can have soccer. You can have all those things. But the land, when it's not being used for sports, it's open space. And that's the beautiful thing about it. You start building these huge structures, and this becomes, as the Jersey Journal or maybe it was New York Star Ledger called it, you know, it becomes mini meadowlands. And that's why we editorially are against Fireman's plan, because it really does represent a mini meadowlands in its conception. Nobody's against active recreation. Nobody's against a amphitheater for musical and theatrical events.
Everybody's for, from everything I understand, everybody is for providing athletic opportunities, more athletic opportunities for Jersey City youth. They don't have enough, and this would be one of my major criticisms of the present administration. Now, they've done nothing, in my view, to increase and improve the recreational opportunities, especially for, you know, the kids that most need it. So there's been no rec centers built in the last 9 years under this administration. Yet we're building the Pompidou. The hockey rink in the Heights is out of commission. It can't be used. Cave and Point Recreation Area from every, the athletic area at Cave and Point right now, everybody who uses it says it's in horrific condition. People use, words I can't repeat to describe it. So there are all kinds of opportunities that have been missed to improve recreation to these kids. And what's really sad is that there has been this battle created between Friends of Liberty State Park and Paul Fire, and I really think Paul Fireman has, with the help of a very talented PR guy named Derek Shuffler, turned this into a raging battle, and it never should have been. And he's racialized it in a way that I think is despicable. I think people can criticize Sam Pessin. Sam is zealously trying to keep Liberty State Park, a green space. That is his first and foremost, objective. He wants to see the 61 acres turn to active recreation. Has no problem with that. People can say, people get the sense that Sam is like, all powerful or something, but Sam never brought race into this. And he's got plenty of African Americans on his board, and that have been part of his group. What Fireman did, I think, is despicable, making this a racial issue. And there are plenty of African Americans who agree with that. Everybody wants. So I'll just close it. I sound like I'm running for office on this, I know, but people need to get together and put the kids first. Let's get the profit motive out of this. Let's get Cave and Point out of this. Even the mayor has said he's not in favor of doing anything to Cave and Point. He wants to keep it the way it is. We need to get, a rational plan for Liberty State Park. And the plan, from what I understand, is the one that the DEP was going to roll out 2 weeks ago, and that the governor quashed. I've said enough about it. I know that I went on too long.
No.
You've been very patient.
The reason I ask this question is because I want to get your thoughts on this, because I know that this is an issue that really matters to you. And I think the way you – and the reason I asked is because I knew I was going to get a good breakdown about this, because I think that, and I mean that complimentary, certainly, with you, because I always enjoy talking with you. But the idea – like I recently interviewed – a baseball coach that has his issues with the city about fields not being up to par for our baseball teams at the high schools. And I interviewed recently. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to that interview on the podcast. I'll send it to you. I think you'll find it very interesting. I think it's a guy you definitely want to interview. Yeah, I think it's definitely Josh Padetta, a really good guy I think you might want to interview, because he's one of those high school baseball coaches, I think, at Ferris, I believe, who, those kids can't even practice on good baseball fields. So the reason that, again, I brought that up is because, I wasn't aware about the elements of this. Again, and this is why, as an attorney, you're a great resource to pick a brain for. When you think about, again, it is a state park, but is it possible where the city could maybe work something out with the state where at least some revenues could come to the city, or that's just a non-negotiable?
I don't think there's any way that that it could be city revenue. And to be honest, I think that most people are of the opinion. I think Sean LaTourette is of this opinion, and I think most park advocates are of the opinion
that the park should not be used to generate revenue, that it has a value unto all of its own. We don't ask, you know, we don't ask Alamuchi State Park or, you know, any other state park to generate revenue. Parks have a value all of their own. Green space has a value all of its own. And once we start thinking of it in those terms, we're going to destroy it. I point out that Jersey City is one of the densest populated cities in the country. It might be the most, as I recall. And, certainly New Jersey is, I think, the densest state in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of taking green space, of reducing green space for these structures that are going to be used so little in comparison to, as a percentage of the time throughout the year, to me is just crazy. And again, I think what people need to ask is, why haven't we improved Caven Point Athletic Area? Why have we, why isn't the Pershing hockey rink usable? Why has the equipment been allowed to fall into disrepair when we're spending spending millions on a French art museum? I mean, these are really simple questions to me, and I think most people would agree that there's a priority issue here, and Fireman, I think, has taken advantage of a legitimate complaint that people have, which is that not enough money is being spent, especially on kids that don't have the opportunities to go to summer camp in the summer because their parents are wealthy enough to send them. A lot of kids in Jersey City will never have that opportunity to go to a great camp or to get away from the city, get into, you know, areas of the country that aren't urban. You know, there's a great organization called Team Wilderness. I don't know if you've talked to Steve Cunningham. And you should, and he takes kids from Jersey City, you know, from the south side of Jersey City, from kids that have never been outside of the city, and he takes them into the woods and has them rappelling down the side of cliffs. Why are these kids not getting that opportunity? Why are they not? Why don't they have good places to play baseball and soccer and football?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one big success story, is in Bergen-Lafayette, and that was something that was really started by the Healy administration and Fulop finished it. But nothing's been done. Fireman has lit a fire, no pun intended, under an issue that people are legitimately concerned about. And Hurley is right. You know, there aren't enough places for people to play. I hear this from parents. And I know sports is a big thing for you. And, if I were running for office, I'd be saying, let's build more fields for kids. And I think Sam Peston is 100% behind that. I talk to him a lot about this issue. 100% behind that. It's just, it's because of this frustration people feel, which is legitimate frustration, over the state of athletic fields in Jersey City, they want to go into Liberty State Park. And I don't blame them for wanting to, but that's not the answer. They want to build stadiums. 61 acres of open active recreation would be great, like Central Park or Prospect Park.
Sure.
So anyway, yeah.
Aaron, you raise great points. And again, it's one of the reasons I enjoy talking with you. Before I let you go real quick, I know you don't want to disclose too much because I like playing poker, so I don't like to show my cards either. But anything juicy coming up that maybe we should keep an eye out for with the Jersey Times?
Well, I think the issue of policing and police morale, I'll just leave it at that, is a big one. As I've worked more with people that work for the city, and including policemen and the people that work at 911 and the call center, I gained incredible respect for them, and I've realized how difficult their jobs are and how underappreciated they are. And so I want to write about them, and they're afraid to tell their stories because,
they know that they'll lose their jobs if they're ever, connected, to a story in the newspaper. So they live in fear, but people are coming to me and saying, you got to look into this, you got to look into that. This is, you can't believe what's going on. And it makes me sad, it makes me sad because, as a taxpayer, we pay their, we're in a sense their bosses, we're paying their salaries and we're expecting them to protect us. We're expecting them to do all this stuff for us. And we have a municipal workforce, it seems, especially in public safety, that is extremely unhappy and feels unappreciated. And that's not good. And, I run a small business besides Jersey City Times. And, the key to having a successful business is having happy employees. They're going to watch your back. And if you don't, they're not. And so I worry about that as somebody who lives in Jersey City, and I want to try and get the stories out there about that.
Fair enough. So there's no decision on Councilman Aaron Moreau in the future for 25, maybe, or am I jumping the gun here, bro?
I people are always telling me I should run for office or ask me why I don't, or if I'm thinking about it. I'm too old. I just don't feel like, I want to start a new career like that at my age. But B, I'm really happy doing what I'm doing right now. Listen, I think doing what those guys do is really hard work. I do. I think, I'd like to make sure we have the very best people doing that work because it's really hard work I tip my hat to anybody that can sit through those meetings, go over the stuff they have to go over, listen to all the citizens, and their opinions and their complaints hour after hour. I think it's an incredibly hard job. So I'm not sure I would be the perfect person to do that. But I do have strong feelings about it, obviously, about these issues. No announcements coming up.
Okay. Well, just in case, I got to get that.
One thing I always say though, this is just sort of a joke, but if I could waltz into office like John Corzine did or Mike Bloomberg or Phil Murphy did, because I had the money just to bankroll my campaign, put in $15, $20 million of my money and become a senator or a governor, I might consider it. That's pretty cool. Yeah. But, man, running for local office, that's a tough one.
Your heart's in the right place and you can articulate it. You can articulate positions as good as anybody, which is why I enjoy speaking to you. Again, you're always a great resource. I love our conversations. I love our dialogue. I think that, you're a wealth of information. And I say it consistently when people have come up to me, oh, why would you ever bother interviewing Aaron Moreau? My answer is always consistently, Aaron, why not? He's a good guy.
Why would they say that? Why would they question you interviewing me? Come on. It should be obvious. I'm just kidding.
Well, they question
but
me.
But don't blow smoke. Don't blow smoke.
Well, listen. Listen. They question me because it's me. But I'm always consistent. I like to talk to everybody. And I feel that I'm always a fair and engaging interviewer. And I want to talk to people. So You're always a wealth of information, and I always enjoy our talks, and you're very insightful and informative. And again, folks, check out Aaron Moreau's amazing news site. Always, if you have a chance, subscribe, get on their email list at jcitytimes.com. Make sure you obviously like them on Facebook, and of course, but more importantly, subscribe to get your inbox full of all the good stuff going on in Jersey City. Aaron, you're an amazing guy. Keep up the good work. I'll give you the last word tonight, bro.
Thanks, Fernando. It is so much fun to talk to you, and thanks for letting me rant for a minute there. It's a real luxury to be able to sort of spout off like that. And, you may be a Republican, but you're a great listener, and that's I say that with all the
love. Oh, my God. But, Aaron, I'm a really, I think, rational conservative. I think that I'm someone that
you are. Hey, listen,
I read the Wall Street Journal every day, so my view is I listen to all voices. I want to hear all voices,
yeah.
And one thing I hate is an echo chamber. I can't stand an echo chamber. So I love the fact
I'm with you. I'm
I love the fact that
you.
There's a Republican up there in Union City, shaking things up.
Well, I appreciate our dialogue. I think you're a wealth of information. I think you really shed light on a lot of things and dynamics that are important for Jersey residents. Again, as we have ultimately a mayor that's going to be running for governor and trying to win the Democratic primary, I think it's important to have the record dissected, and you do a good job of that. Steve Fuller might disagree with me, but I think you do a good job. And folks, he is Aaron Merrill. folks, he is Aaron Merrill, the founder and publisher of the Jersey City Times. Check him out, jcitytimes.com, a great resource. And he's our guest this week here on Talking Nothing. Bro, have a great Easter. Happy birthday. I know your birthday was in late March. I made a point to send you a shout out on social media.
The 25th.
So,
thank you.
Happy birthday.
And you
listen,
be well.
Have
a great
Listen,
Easter.
Happy,
too, okay?
happy 35th birthday to you. And, keep up the good work, young man.
All right. Thank you, Fernando. Be well.
Take care, brother. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Folks, again, I appreciate the patience there. A little technical difficulty. But, again, a great interview today with Aaron Merrill, the founder and editor of the Jersey City Times, a great resource, and a guy I enjoy talking to consistently on this podcast. And he has a lot to say. He's a sharp mind politically, and he's a sharp mind journalistically. So some people might disagree with me, but I'll stick up for Aaron Merrill, you know, every day of the week and twice on Sunday. So good stuff with him today. Folks, as always, download the episodes. Take them with you wherever you get your podcast, and certainly whether it's going to the gym, walking your dog, as the weather's getting warmer, hey, maybe you're just outside having a cocktail, smoking a cigar, you'll be on your smartphone, hey, tune in to Talking the Hudson, wherever you get your podcast, and of course, folks, make sure that you share it, because sharing is caring with your favorite podcast here in Hudson County. Once again, folks, I want to thank my incredible sponsors on the show here, the city I call home. Check out the city website, www.ucnj.com. Great stuff coming up, folks, here this Friday, April the 7th, at the Wilhelm Musso Cultural Center, the Bonafide Concert Duo, amazing acoustic stuff. We have Cinco de Mayo celebration coming up on Friday, May the 5th, without question, next month, at the International Plaza with the Mexican flag raising ceremony, and then later in the evening at 6 p.m., there'll be a great concert with live music, of course, mariachi music at Celia Cruz Park right on Bergenline Avenue, right off of 32nd Street and the Viaduct. Folks, again, great community events, Mother's Day luncheon coming up on Saturday, May 12th at the Colin Powell Elementary School. And, of course, the Easter Fair coming up this Saturday, April the 8th from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. on downtown 15th Street. Activities, rides, free admission, and maybe, just maybe, I'm hearing a rumor, folks, that the Easter Bunny might be in town. Hey, go check out the Easter Bunny, as he'll be maybe in downtown Union City. Gotta go there, folks, to find out if he shows up to help spread some Easter cheer. All the good stuff going on, folks, in the city of Union City. Check him out, once again, www.ucnj.com. A special thank to our amazing mayor, his leadership, Mayor Brian Steck, along with our outstanding commissioners, Lucio Fernandez, Margie Martinetti, Celine Valdivia, and Wendy Gruan. Yes, folks, the best leadership in Hudson County here, courtesy of Union City, New Jersey. Check it out, www.ucnj.com. Make sure you, of course, follow it on Facebook and, of course, also on Twitter as well. Folks, also want to let you know about the town of Weehawken. Shout out to Mayor Richard Turner, Gio Amato, the town council. Great stuff going on in the town of Weehawken, whether it's about community, recreation. Special reminder, coming up on Tuesday, April 25th, is important school board election and referendum. All the information is there about the upcoming school board election, www.weehawken-nj.us. Don't forget to like the town of Weehawken on Facebook. And, of course, folks, make sure you follow the town of Weehawken on Twitter, at WeehawkenNJ. And certainly, again, I can't say enough about great things going on in the township of Weehawken in the spring and summer months ahead here as a proudly sponsor, Talking the Hudson here on Block Talk Radio. Also, folks, want to let you know about the town of West New York, my hometown, born and raised there. I'm a proud Memorial Tiger. Do make it a point, ladies and gentlemen, to check out what's going on there at westnewyorknj.org, whether it's about recreational soccer, new parking garage coming up here, a new project coming up on 57th Street, help alleviate some parking burdens for West New York residents. Again, ladies and gentlemen, I cannot say how important that is coming up this week. 57th Street and that parking lot behind the old Models on Bergenline Avenue certainly will be closed for the next 12 months as construction begins, for obviously a new parking garage. I can't say enough, folks. It's going to be great stuff going on there in the town of West New York, again, as the new public library will be built there coming up. So stay tuned for that. Great stuff going on in the town of West New York, courtesy of Mayor Gabriel Rodriguez and the Board of Commissioners, along with Township Administrator Jonathan Castaneda. Make sure you like the Township of West New York on Facebook, of course, at Town of WNY. Also, of course, follow it on Instagram and Twitter. Same handle, @TownofWNY. And, of course, folks, I want to give a shout-out to our last sponsor here, the Office of State Senator Brian P. Sack. Again, amazing representation in the New Jersey State Senate there, and obviously in the 33rd Legislative District. Folks, pre-COVID, post-COVID, whatever, State Senator Brian Sack has been there for us in the 33rd Legislative District, whether it's about renter's relief, services for seniors, for our children. State Senator Brian Sack works harder than anybody in the State Senate, in the State Legislature, period, folks, representing the new 33rd Legislative District, obviously running with new Assembly running mates, Julio Marenco and Gabriel Rodriguez, the outgoing mayor of West New York. Folks, hey, this is the leadership you vote for. This is the leadership you want. Again, running the primary this June, and he'll be running for re-election this November to represent us here in the 33rd Legislative District, folks. Yes, he's a fellow member of Cowboys Nation, but there's no denying his dedication to the 33rd Legislative District. Folks, always remember, State Senator Brian Stack, proud supporter of the podcast and a proud supporter of his constituents here in Hudson County in the 33rd Legislative District. Once again, folks, I want to thank my guest this week, the founder and editor of the Jersey City Times, Aaron Morrill, for a great conversation, very insightful, a lot of good stuff. Share the episode when you can, folks. It's the best podcast, the longest running weekly episodic podcast in Hudson County politics since March of 2017 and still going strong in 2023. Always remember, folks, if it's unbiased, unfiltered, and unafraid, it's always the 7-time award-winning Talk on the Hudson here on Blog Talk Radio. Of course, I am New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, top 100 Latino Villa Latino Spread online magazine, the weapon of mass disruption in Garden State media, and, of course, the people's choice and the people's voice. Yes, it's me, Fernando Uribe, folks, saying so long, and as always, thank you so much for listening here on Blog Talk Radio.